Welcome back to Making Conversation, a show about artists and designers and their journey from bright-eyed newbie to fame monster. My name is Justin Ulm, and this is my co-host,
Sean Choi, the scapegoat.
And we are here today with our guest,
Carson Smith.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. I am, honestly, I'm super stoked to be here, and honestly, a little bit touched that I'm episode number three. That's pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, touching our guests is something we strive to do.
Touching and
good
cherishing.
Good touch.
Oh, yeah.
Seeking inspiration in whatever way possible. Yeah, have you guys had a good week?
Yeah, it's been, I would say it's been not bad. You know, it's got the usual work kind of dilemmas, stresses, but other than that, I mean, pretty good.
Yeah, Sean?
Yeah, I had a pretty rough week.
Oh.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. Just chilling, drinking coffee all night. Oh, that's nice.
Oh, I see.
Oh, yeah.
Sarcasm.
Yes. Life's a bitch.
Yeah, life's a bitch. Yeah. With a cappuccino in your hand.
Oh, yeah. All the way. What about you, Justin?
I've had an insane week.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Yeah. We're in the process of moving to see you.
Oh, that's right.
And
yeah.
And so I've been dealing with crazy drama at City Hall.
Oh. Okay. First of all, say hi to City Hall.
Hello, City Hall.
What's up, Gregor?
Yeah.
Robertson?
Hello, Gregor.
Gregor.
Yeah. And hello to the building permits and processing department.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you for rejecting my drawings.
Wow.
And then accepting my drawings.
Oh. So. It's like give and take.
Did they get out a red pen and start like marking stuff off?
No. Well, yeah, they got
it. Was just like a big fail stamp or something.
They got a highlighter out.
Like which color? Green or orange?
Straight up yellow, man.
Shit. Like,
oh, that's like, just stock.
Yeah, stock. I mean, it's City Hall.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's what you'd expect, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting place. I don't know if you guys have ever been in there, but
I don't think I have, though.
Yeah.
No.
We for the last 2 days, we got up at 7 a.m. and showered and rushed down there in a car to go, thinking that we could beat the line. But both days, there's already like 30 people lined
wow.
up at the door.
Oh, man. Geez.
It's like get a life, right?
Yeah.
But they all have like the serious architectural drawings in hand, like wow. the big roll, you know, of like 50 sheets of paper. That man. They spread out over like, I don't know, 20 by 30 inch yeah. desk.
Bunch of nerds.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And they're showing up in like suits and stuff, right? Like,
oh yeah,
really.
Oh god.
And showered, obviously, too.
Yeah. And so when we show up with our 8.5 by 11 printouts off our home laser printer, they treat us a little bit differently. So.
Oh
yeah, they judge you, don't
man.
They?
Yeah,
prejudice.
Yeah. And all of that, plus I've been learning how to build continuing in my journey to build iOS apps. So, yeah, it's been a week of learning for me.
Man, and productive.
You know, with learning comes pain.
Although, I would be okay without the pain part. You know, it makes sense, but it just doesn't make it any easier, I guess.
Yeah, it's true.
Agreed.
Yeah, I don't think learning actually has to be that painful.
I don't either, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Screw that.
I don't know. I think like running and stuff, yeah. exercise, yeah, that's going to hurt. That just, it's physically going to hurt. But other things, mm-hmm. I don't know. If it's a hobby, a passion, or a pursuit, I think you can kind of at least muffle a lot of that pain with just, you know, genuine interest in that topic. I don't know.
I mean, at least I like drawing and I like using Illustrator, but you know what I failed at? This is actually kind of an embarrassing admission, I guess. But I drew my drawings in a program called Sketch.
Oh,
I
yeah.
don't know if you guys have heard of Sketch.
Yes, I have heard of this, never used it though.
Yeah, it's sort of like the UI designer's new lightsaber, mm-hmm. I guess, or something. So I love it for designing assets for like websites or mobile apps and stuff like that. And so I just thought, oh, well, I'll use this to draw my plans for
mm-hmm.
the shop.
Mm-hmm.
Not realizing that they have no way to change the units out of PostScript points to anything else. So when it came to scaling my drawings,
right,
I had to convert my point scale to inches and then scale it all to like 1/4 inch to 1 foot or something. Anyways, this is like way too technical and not interesting for our listeners. But
it's interesting
for me. It was a horrible, horrible decision.
Yeah.
For all of you out there who are doing architectural site plans, do not use Sketch.
Shout out to Architect.
Yeah. You'll learn something, I guess, right? TIL.
What was that? TIL?
TIL, yes. Today I learned. What do you call those things? An acronym? Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like IRL.
IRL.
Or LOL.
LOL.
OMFG.
Yeah, I think Gravacious loves those.
I would expect he does.
Shout out to Gravacious.
What's up, Gray?
What up?
But yeah, where are you from originally, Carson?
I am from Canada, I would say. specifically, I guess Regina, Saskatchewan. Go Riders.
Oh,
wow,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah. Justin, yeah, you're from, well, you lived in Saskatchewan for a while, eh?
Yep.
Yeah. So you know what it's about, right?
Oh, I know.
Yeah, but it's like a unique experience, Saskatchewan, I would say. Not many people have been. A lot of people have driven through, but no one's really been there to really, you know, get a sense of what it's like there.
It's true.
It's like saying you're from the middle of nowhere. You might as well, because no one has any kind of point of reference or anything.
Is it really?
Yeah. I mean, sure, Antarctica, the Canadian Shield would be more middle of nowhere, but Saskatchewan's not far off.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, but I only lived there anyway for about 3 years, and then kind of hopped around a little bit after that. Lived in kind of right outside Toronto for a little while when I was really young. Wow. Moved to Calgary, and from Calgary moved to Indianapolis, which is in Indiana.
Nice.
Wow.
And from there moved back to Calgary. And after Calgary, after I finished up my high school, I decided to go to Emily Carr in Vancouver, and I just stuck around.
What a life, eh?
Yeah. What a life. Yeah. I don't know if it was a good or a bad thing in the long run, you know, doing all that moving, but it happened. Yeah, it's weird, though. Like, I was such a kid moving around all the time, you know. I didn't really have, I don't know, you don't have any say in it, and you don't really know what to make sense of it. It's just kind of disruptive, but, I mean, it's, I guess, good practice for being an adult where you just deal with disappointment all the time, so. I don't know.
Oh, man. Okay.
All right.
That's fuel for later, I guess.
not to say I'm like a sad person or anything, but.
So, as you know, this is a podcast, and so there's no way for anybody to actually see your neck. But we're wondering if it's red, and what is the most redneck thing you've ever done?
The most redneck thing I've ever done? I can name a few things. I don't know if I can share all of them, but one of them was when I was in Calgary. And man, the thing about Calgary you have to understand is that, you know, it's very much unlike Vancouver, especially when I was growing up there. It's so spread out. You just have a playground to do whatever you want with if you can find the empty space. And there's a lot of empty space. So I have these memories of me and my friends, you know, driving our cars out to, you know, empty parking lots. And, before that, we would buy, you know, a 24-pack of water bottles, buy some aluminum foil, Drano, and you mix all that up, shake it, and then throw it, and it explodes, and it's really loud and releases a toxic cloud, and it's really fun when you're a kid.
Nice.
Yeah. So, awesome. I mean, that was what we would do sometimes. Yeah. Pretty fun, actually. I think we actually stopped when my friend had a really close call with it. We had the bright idea of filling up an Algene bottle, right? Which is a lot sturdier than a water bottle, just a plastic water bottle. So this Algene, he couldn't tell that it was expanding, right? Because you like mix it, it heats up, and then expands and blows the walls off the thing and into that cloud, right? And so he has this Algene, he's like dancing around with it, you know, acting like nothing bad's going to happen. And he tosses it, honestly, with about 2 feet away from it, explodes in the air. The cloud covers up his clothes, like bleaches everything that was exposed to the smoke. And we all just run off laughing. And he was fine. I think it was a close call, and we I think you know, toned it down after that. No Allergene bottles, but
wow, is t- is he still alive?
Oh, he's fine. Yeah, he's he's still alive.
What do you think of the movie Cool Runnings? And do you feel like it captured reality of the Olympics in Calgary as a kid?
Was that set in Calgary?
Yeah.
Oh man, I guess it was like based on a true story. You know what? I haven't seen that movie.
Oh really?
Yeah, yeah. It was.
I'm gonna edit this part out. It's a little bit before
my time. Oh, Justin failed.
You know, I, honestly, I feel like I should see that movie, and you're not mistaken for assuming that I did. I just haven't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's entertaining, man.
I bet. You know, it's got like a cult following, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
John Candy.
No
first
way.
First Jamaican bobsled team.
Yeah. John Candy. Wow.
Yeah.
John Candy. JFK.
Uncle Buck is who you're thinking of.
Yeah, Uncle Buck, great movie.
He's like the Canadian Chris Farley.
Totally.
Same kind of fate too, sadly.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
Tell us about the art and design scene in Alberta.
The thing is, when I was living in Calgary, I was there for high school, right? And you know, like all high school art students, you're kind of just creating stuff in the school while you have your time dedicated to it. I mean, I go home and draw, but I was never really serious into investigating and displaying my work anywhere.
Right.
But actually within my school, there was a bit of a, you know, I would say a small but dedicated group of people who were, you know, into that kind of thing. Actually went to school with a, an artist here in Vancouver, Mark Gilling, and we, pretty good friends back then, still are, but,
what's up, Mark?
Yeah. What's up, Mark? It was cool though to, you know, I don't know, just be in that environment and, you know, have someone to come over to Vancouver with me, especially once I graduated from high school.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
Yeah. Most of my friends, I'd say about like 90% of them all went east. And so it was cool to have at least one guy come with me to my school. So, but in terms of an art scene, if you were to go back today, I think you would see quite a bit. Calgary, I think, has got maybe a little bit of a bad rep in everywhere outside of Alberta. And I think people are seeing when they go there and check it out that there's actually quite a good, you know, sense of culture, really good music. That was something I was into when I was living in Calgary, was like small shows, you know, local bands, that kind of thing, checking it out. Was actually in a band my own with some of my buddies back in high school.
What were they called?
Our name was called Royal Purple.
Oh, yeah.
We were a metal band. And we metal were bands. We were brutal. But that was the point.
You were brutal?
That was the point, yeah.
Yeah.
You
know,
like, were you the vocal or were you just playing guitar. Instrument?
I was the rhythm guitar. I have a friend who is a wizard. And so I just let him do all the hard work. Yeah. But getting back to art and design, I mean, there's ACAD in Calgary.
Yeah, I heard that school have a really good program down there.
Yeah, actually, it is fairly renowned. I think it's picking up a little bit of steam, too. I'm starting to see more grads coming here to Vancouver who have gone to ACAD. And, you know, they're getting jobs and stuff. So,
oh, actually, I got an offer from ACAD.
Oh, really?
For the university, but I rejected and went to Emily Carr.
Yeah, yeah.
I applied to Emily Carr, OCAD, Ryerson, Concordia, and ACAD. And ACAD was the first school they were the only school to reject me.
Really?
And then they sent me a letter later saying, oh, actually, we actually want you in.
So. They're playing hard to get.
Did you write them back? Fuck you. No.
Because I'm from the prairies as well, I didn't really have like a strong desire to just go to Calgary for school. So.
Right. You want to leave. You got to spread your wings.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the same thing for me. I mean, and it was the same thing for everybody. It's almost like a thing that you do when you graduate high school. You're not going to stay. You got to move. No. You got to check it out. I don't know.
Yeah.
You could live in New York and you'd still want to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what I think, at least.
So do you have a desire to go back to the prairies?
I don't know. After West Coasting it for a bit, it's pretty hard to leave. You know, I'm not the most outdoorsy guy. I do enjoy it. I try and be outdoorsy when I can. But just like having this ocean access and kind of the milder weather. I mean, you know, prairie winters, they're just in it. Yeah, it's bone chilling.
They are harsh.
That's enough for me to stay here.
So I guess you like Vancouver.
I do. You could say that.
Yeah. And what have been some of your highlights and lowlights here?
Some of my highlights have been work after school. You know, after finishing up at Emily Carr, I was there for 4 years, did my communication design degree.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the real world, I guess, if you want to call it that, of working 9 to 5 has been really fun. I, you know, had a bit of this dark era, you know, trying to find a job for 3 months after I got my diploma.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, it's been kind of as advertised, I would say, the whole creative field, you know, and that's been a really nice realization for me, at least. You know, it's always collaborative. You're working on a bunch of projects at the same time. For the most part, you know, they're really interesting and unique and diverse. And people are just having fun. You know, that's the thing that kind of blows me away when I think about it, is that you're never really dreading anything. I'm sure you have projects you want to focus more on and some less, but it's always, I mean, you're sketching, you're drawing, you're ideating, you're creating mood boards, you're talking to people. Like, what's not to like about any of those things? I'm not crunching numbers. I'm not, you know, lifting steel pipes and stuff over my head. It's, it's pretty relaxed. It's kind of crazy. You're like, I didn't realize I could have this much fun kind of, you know, professionally. So that's been a really nice part of my life, I guess.
Sweet. Yeah.
I'm sure you guys feel the same way about your work.
No, yeah. I like, whenever I feel like I deserve more, I always remind myself that we get paid to do the most ridiculous work. It's so enjoyable. Like, I just scour the web for inspiration, create things that I think are beautiful, and, you know, interact with people to try and help them, you know, actualize their dream. You know,
absolutely.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah. You know, like,
it's a really good point.
Yeah. To get paid to basically be creative, you know, like 40 to 60 hours a week.
Right.
It's kind of a dream. So.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. Especially
good point.
When you bring a project from the beginning to completion, that's super satisfying in a way that I can't imagine anything else being. Like, you know, a really good businessman or whatever, and I closed a big deal, I'd probably feel the same way, but I'm not. So this is a pretty good fit for me.
Maybe we should just forget about the lowlights.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The only lowlight, I would say, is was first
when
year.
When you're actually in the porn industry for a while, that the lowlight?
It was, yeah. It was not the most lucrative time to get into it. Yeah. I also can't grow a mustache, so that didn't help my, you know, my job application.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. No porn stash here.
It's okay.
Yeah. Are you, Sean, are you challenged also facial hairly?
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
My face doesn't generate any hair.
It's okay, man. We need a support group for this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's tough.
We should actually make the Facebook group for this, you know?
We could.
Yeah. Do you feel like a designer or an artist? It's actually kind of an interesting question after what we just talked about, because we spoke very broadly about what we do, being creative. So
Yeah, definitely. That's tough. You know, I like to, in a perfect world, imagine them as the same in some ways, you know, where design and art are not that far apart. And I don't think they necessarily are. I mean, when you get down to the details of design versus art, design is essentially art for industry, I guess, if I had to put it in the simplest terms possible. But that doesn't really encapsulate it entirely, because with design, you're working for clients. Art, it's essentially whatever you want it to be. It's mostly for yourself. So I don't know if I can pick one that I like more than the other, or one that I identify more with. What I would like to do in a perfect world is be an artist, I imagine. Just because it's the same as design for the reasons I mentioned, but you're doing it, you know, for yourself. There's no expectation, no client other than what you want to get out of it. And I think that's just like a really cool freeing experience. And so because of that, I try and be involved in a few, you know, extracurricular activities involving art. So, you know, I work on projects on my own time and try and get into shows whenever I can, and just have fun within that sense. So, I mean, I would love to be an artist full time, but I'm not too choked about having to, you know, punch the clock 9 to 5 to be a designer, because I don't find that it's not that different, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Well, talking about your career as a designer, so I heard you're working for Lululemon.
Yes, I am.
Cool. Yeah. Good for you.
It's a bit of a, okay, it's a bit of a white elephant in some ways, I find.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. what was your first contact with Lululemon?
My first contact? Actually,
yeah,
it was a good first impression I had. Back in Emily Carr, there was two designers, Tom Chung, Greg Popov. Justin, I'm sure you remember those guys.
Let's say what's up to Tom Chung and Greg Popov.
Yeah.
what's up?
But they were working on something for the lab, which is one of Lululemon's outlets. And they were doing tables, and they're doing like a signpost or like a display board, stuff like that. And they were allowed, from what I could see from the outside looking in, it looked like they had a lot of creative freedom with what they were doing. And that really put a good, you know, impression of Lululemon in my mind, and that they just would value creativity and personal input and experience, and weren't going to shut projects down because they didn't fit some sort of aesthetic or some sort of notion of what Lululemon was about that I seem to have had. You know, because when I looked at Greg and Tom's work, it was very them. It wasn't Lululemon specifically, and I thought that was really cool that a company was willing to invest in them and display that stuff proudly in their space after working with them. And so that was really the first, I guess, legitimate interaction I had with the brand. And then out of school, just found out they were hiring, and one thing led to the next, and I ended up working there in August 2012, and I have not looked back because it's been a really cool experience.
What are you doing there?
My title is graphic designer, but I feel that might not be the best descriptor. I feel like sometimes I dabble in a little bit of product design, a little bit of store design. You know, there's definitely the bulk is graphic design, where I'm, you know, doing like pseudo advertisements and packaging, that kind of stuff. But I'm given a lot of cool opportunities to expand beyond that, and, you know, working areas that I wouldn't have thought I'd be working in.
So what's your hourly rate? Just kidding.
Yeah.
Don't answer that.
I don't think you have an hourly rate.
No, I just, I just do this out of the goodness of my heart.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm just trying to make Vancouver a little bit more beautiful.
You can be honest with us. It's really for access to cheap yoga pants, right?
Do you do yoga?
Yes, I do. On occasion, I'm not H core. I don't have a top bun, and I don't drink kombucha.
Sorry, what's kombucha?
It's the most disgusting thing ever. It's honestly fermented growing fungus or something like that. I don't know the details. Geez. But it's supposed to be good for you. It smells like vinegar and it tastes like vinegar. Oh, but people drink it. Some people like it, I guess. I have a hard time believing that's true.
Yeah,
man.
Whenever I've come in contact with kombucha, it's normally kombucha nuked with, you know, the heaviest, most taste-concealing thing ever. And they're like, oh, I love kombucha. I'm like, no, clearly you do not. You like that cranberry juice mixed in with that whatever it is. But you don't like kombucha. Yeah. But going to yoga and, you know, loosening up a little bit is really handy.
So do you wear yoga pants while you're running, or Speedo?
I normally just run with a fig leaf. Totally Greek style.
Man, I'm disappointed.
It's aerodynamic that way.
For sure.
How many pairs of yoga pants are in your closet?
I think I've got about 4. And by yoga pants, I mean just Lululemon pants, really.
You didn't have to specify.
Yeah, I don't know. See, it's funny. I didn't need to, but I feel like there's a stigma for whatever reason. I don't know. Maybe you guys feel it too or something. I don't know. Like, Sean, do you do yoga?
Oh, yes, I do, but I prefer naked yoga, so.
Oh, I see. Well, you're you're a unique breed of human being, I guess.
Oh, yes. I can actually, if somebody cut off two of my fingers on one hand, I could still count the number of times I've done yoga on one hand.
Oh, man.
Not saying I'm against it or anything.
No, I know what you mean, though. Yeah, it's just, it needs a little bit more time, I think, to evolve. Mm-hmm. For men, at least. Mm-hmm. I think women are already, they're way ahead of us in terms of doing yoga and enjoying it. But there's a stigma.
Do you think yoga is like spiritual, or it's just about the like pants and yoga mat?
It can be spiritual for some people, not for me. Yeah. Actually, I kind of really dislike it when the teacher starts, you know, dropping all this proverbial stuff and talks about yoga as a way of life. I don't know. I'm sure it is for some people, but I had this teacher mm-hmm. this one time who said the cheesiest thing ever, and I'll never forget it. But we were like, you know, the class was just starting. We're like cross-legged on the mats. And he says, you don't do yoga. And then, you know, like a 10-second pause.
So what do you do?
He says, you are yoga. And I just rolled my eyes.
Oh, no.
It was so embarrassing. I
oh my God.
Had a hard time keeping a straight face and staying.
I'm getting a goosebump right now. Holy shit.
Terrible. God. Terrible.
That might be the Academy Award winning moment for all yoga teachers.
Quote of the year.
Yeah,
it's like he's been watching a few too many Tom Cruise movies.
Yeah, Tom Cruise. This is a reoccurring theme, eh?
Yeah. It's like
one shout out every show.
Wow,
Tom Cruise, what's up?
I walk by the Church of Scientology every day, Tom Cruise.
Never go in though.
No.
You don't even want that free personality test.
You don't do Scientology. You are Scientology.
Ooh,
yeah, that's right.
My mind is blown.
Oh, yeah.
Sean, have you been talking to L. Ron Hubbard?
I've been talking to Will Smith, actually.
Is Will Smith a Scientologist?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. We're going to have to Wikipedia that later.
Are you able to take liberty and like talk about design process at all at Lululemon?
I can talk about process a little bit.
Do you guys have a process?
You know what? We do have a process. Kind of like what I was saying earlier, you know, where I found that the job was a lot like school. Mm-hmm. I don't find that it's drastically different in any kind of way. You know, there's, you know, the process normally involves a brief, some initial meetings to establish the understanding of said brief. You mm-hmm. kind of like source the right people to help you, and then you just really get to it. You know, you just mood board it up, try and keep things fuzzy and undefined at the beginning. And then you mm-hmm. gradually start to, you know, narrow it down into a direction that everyone's happy with, really. One of the things I've noticed, though, you know, at a company like Lululemon, I'm sure it's the same at any kind of company, but Lululemon, you know, it's a big company at this point in its life. And there's a lot of different eyes that need to see it before something mm-hmm. gets sent out. And I find that that's actually like it's a nice challenge, you know, it's needs to kind of appeal to a number of people. Not that it needs to be mainstream, but it needs to be, you know, good enough that people who weren't part of the project, who are just seeing it for the first time, get it right away, and they, you know, they love it. They see it and they see the value. And so I've found that that aspect of the job has been pretty unique, pretty fun, versus, you know, the school setup where the people you're always showing, you know, week to week progress are people who have been with you since the beginning of the project, you know? So at Lululemon, mm-hmm. you're bringing people in cold sometimes and getting their opinions and, you know, making sure that they see the value of what you've done. And, I mean, you can do a good job at it. And if you don't, you know, that project can easily be scrapped, you know? So there's a lot of pressure mm-hmm. I find, but you know, that's a good thing. Yeah. So I've enjoyed the challenge.
Cool. Pressure forces performance.
Yeah, I think it does. And I want to be clear, it's not like no one's yelling or breathing down my neck mm-hmm. at any point. And I'm given a lot of freedom and a lot of room to do mm-hmm. my own thing. At the same time, you know, there's an expectation, and I find that really empowering. Mm-hmm.
Do you guys collaborate with other companies as well?
Not entirely, no. I think our brand is, mm-hmm. you know, we do one thing.
Too cool for them?
We're too cool. Yeah, that's it. You nailed it. I was trying to put that a little bit more politically correct, but yeah, we're too cool.
You are the cool.
Yeah, so. Oh, I puked in my mouth a bit. Can't believe I said that.
What's one of the most satisfying projects you've had the joy of working on at Lululemon?
One of the ones I've enjoyed the most is actually one that I've worked on for a store in Whistler. So it's nothing crazy in terms of technical undertaking or whatever it is, but what I got to do was design 7 banners that will hang in the 7 different windows at the Whistler store. For what I understand is to be quite a while, and I just finished up the graphics, and they just got made and fabricated and sent to Whistler. And so I finally got some pictures back, and it looks really cool to see what lived only on my computer, a real thing now. Yeah, and that was just really gratifying because it was a big project, you know. It went from, I think, started maybe, I feel like September last year and finally got the pictures last week. So, yeah.
Wow. Long process, eh?
I mean, it's just getting stuff fabricated and revisions, kind of like what I was talking about, lots of people.
Yeah.
But it's really cool when you finally, you know, see the whole thing come together at the very end.
Cool. So how often do you copy other people's work?
Define copy. don't you mean inspired from or appropriated? Those are some Emily Carr words, right? Actually, that's actually kind of an interesting question. I don't know, Justin and Sean, you guys can probably speak to it too, but I find it really challenging trying to figure out how do I introduce inspiration I've come across into my own work. Sometimes I find that I want to avoid it at the beginning of the project just so I don't become influenced by it. Do you guys jump right into design inspiration off the bat, or are you?
Well, I guess we find like a reference that we would like to work with, and then like we try to find the problem that they have and then trying to improve it. And then I guess like we can like solve the problem visually and actually, you know, strategically, right?
At Steam Clock, we generally have no style at the start of a project and we have no intention of style at all. And it's a process of like understanding our, like, I mean, it's different for our own products than it is for our clients, but when we're working with clients, it's really trying to understand what their needs are.
Yeah, for sure.
And the requirements that they have to, you know, meet their goal. And for doing like large information systems and like systems that people need to interact with and accomplish tasks with, there really isn't any room for style at that point. Like it's a purely formal, logical puzzle solving process of moving information around and shaping it to find the best user experience we can come up with, and then the style is sort of like applied throughout, but usually doesn't come until the end, you know, or like later on where suddenly you know the components you need and then those things take shape to express some. Totally. So it's like software is different that way.
Yeah, I was going to say that's it's kind of a luxury you're afforded. Well, not a luxury, but just a circumstance that kind of comes with user experience, right? Where you're spending so much time storyboarding and, you know, really focusing on the experience versus the visuals. It's a really cool difference. And I don't know, it's just a different way of thinking too.
I think everybody actually is designing for user experience. It's just like that word is glued onto the profession and technology. So. Yeah. But I think like I'm designing shop plans for UTCU's new store and like they're completely designed for user experience. You know, like that's the way I approach everything. And I think that's the way every designer tends to, or maybe I'll just say every designer should approach everything.
that's like called communication design.
Like it's all the same thing. Like I think, you know, you're trying to communicate with people and make them feel comfortable and help them understand. So
it's tough though, designing, just knowing that people all come from different backgrounds and experiences. It's almost impossible to create a unified singular experience for everybody. I kind of like the projects or whatever that are more, I don't know, that dabble a little bit in the art, I guess, of sociology, for example. You know, when I think of designers who do that, you know, Sagmeister, for example, is a great example of someone who, you know, he maybe borders on artists more than designer at sometimes, but I appreciate how loose he approaches his work. You know, just it doesn't really have a goal it's seeking to accomplish. It's more of just providing an experience in some cases.
Yeah, that can be a tough sell for your boss.
Exactly. Yeah.
You can't put your finger on what it, like the goal. Yeah, it's harder to narrow down the steps to get there and follow a process when you're just trying to create an experience.
Right. So.
For sure.
And design, it's kind of worked its way into, you know, corporations, into big businesses, as it should be. It should be in there. But when you're in a big business, the bottom line is always sales and money, you know? And so you need to have some sort of qualitative, quantitative outcome from whatever you're doing. You know, it's not okay to just say, oh, we're increasing brand sentiment, or people are going to like us better if we do this. You need to have numbers to back it up, you know, and it's challenging. Totally.
Yeah.
Not that it's impossible. I mean, without graphic design, a lot of these things would be unusable and just, I mean, straight up uninspiring. But
yeah,
I guess it's so depending on the different like clients.
Yeah.
Right? I see a lot of like illustration in your portfolio rather than like design.
Yeah.
Is this the interest of yours, or like, did you just find it like bunch of images on the internet?
No, I've actually done everything on my website that I claim to have made. That's all mine, actually. So I have not plagiarized anybody. Just FYI. But
FYI.
Yeah, there you go. Another acronym. What I was saying though earlier is I would kind of like to do art if I could. So, you know, why not advertise myself more as an artist, I guess, than a designer? Like I still,
yeah, for sure.
You know, when you think about logos and stuff like that, those are essentially art or an illustration or whatever you want to call it. It's just with a very focused purpose. I would be happy to do logos for the rest of my life. But I also want to do other projects, illustration and stuff. So I feel like the projects I have up on my website currently give people an idea of what I can do. And, I like to talk to people and tell them that if you don't see what you like up there, I can probably work something or a style that I have into something that would appeal to you. I always try to, I don't know, I try to never settle into one kind of style. I hope that comes across in my work and that it's always a little bit different. I mean, I think there's certain aesthetic elements that are consistent, but it varies from, you know, hand done to digital, to silk screen, to, you know, type and stuff like that. And so I just try and be as general as I can when it comes to style a little bit.
Do you do a lot of art in your spare time?
I do, actually. I like to draw quite a bit, and I like to silk screen. I've actually kind of just gotten into silk screen, actually.
Oh, wow, nice.
Yeah, I was drawing on my computer and stuff, and then, you know, you print it out and it's perfect. And you don't want it to be perfect in some cases. It's kind of funny, actually, how art works, in that people appreciate seeing the human fuck up in your work. You know, and actually, I've heard stories of machines that create clothing, and they've been designed in such a way that the stitch isn't perfect to emulate the human hand.
Really?
Interesting.
Yeah, wow. And it's just like this human obsession with something that's handmade, and I see the value, and it makes sense. Shitting on it or anything, but I feel silk screening, it does introduce a level of craft into something that would otherwise be, you know, super crisp and perfect, you know, from a printing standpoint. And so I've really enjoyed that, actually. And you can actually achieve effects that you can't do from a traditional printer, such as, you know, metallic inks and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and just really enjoyed it. It's a nice process too of getting up from your computer and moving around the studio. Like I'm always doing something when I go in there, whether it's, you know, burning the screen, taping it off, cleaning it, drying it, printing, you know, changing it, creating the transparency. I don't know. There's a lot of different steps that are unlike anything mm-hmm, that you do yeah. from your 9 to 5.
Cool. Did you teach yourself how to do silk screen?
No, I should actually probably give a shout out to Blim in Chinatown. Yeah.
Nice.
They were really cool. Oh. They offer this intro workshop that you can, mm-hmm. you know, pay, I think it's like $60 to get like a brief on how to do silk screening. And then from there, you're allowed to use their studio space for something really reasonable, like $5 an hour.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, really? I just go in there and I use their screens, their equipment, their inks. You have to you pay for it all, sick. But it's super awesome having all right. that space to do that. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm normally the only guy in wow. there. So I pretty much have a studio that I pay for only when I'm there.
So I guess you're like working alone or with people whenever you're doing the projects?
I normally do it on my own. Yeah, I enjoy yeah. being a lone wolf when it comes to my own work. I'm not opposed to collaborations mm-hmm. or anything like that, but mm-hmm. I like working at my own pace. And my pace is normally pretty frantic. You know, I hear that I'm going to be part of a show, you know, a month in advance, and all the work gets done in the last 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that would mesh very well with anybody else. So I just try and keep my no. panic and chaos to myself.
Where do you find your inspiration for your illustrations?
I think I get a lot of it from, you know, TV and stuff, you know, kind of cartoons you see on the TV. Growing up, for example, mm-hmm. I was a big fan of The Simpsons, stuff like that. And I just really appreciated that simplicity to it, you know, where you have mm-hmm. very simplified characters in some cases. But those characters, you know, The Simpsons being an adult cartoon, finding themselves in adult circumstances, you know, it's a cartoon, but the thing I found the most appealing about it was that it has this weird kind of duality to it where, I mean, The Simpsons isn't a particularly violent show, but there's instances where like Homer gets beat up or falls into a canyon or something like that. And mm-hmm. I remember being a little kid and just seeing that, and it was interesting to have something that's traditionally mm-hmm. understood as a child's medium being kind of adult orientated and not graphic, but crude, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I grew up watching Transformers and Big Guy and Rusty and stuff like that. And so those, mm-hmm. I think, were always, you know, inspirations for my style.
Cool.
You know, aesthetically, I don't know yeah. if I draw from any particular artist that I have in mind, but I think if mm-hmm. if you take a look at my work, it's kind of inspired by, I don't know, line drawings in general.
A lot of designers and artists from North America have this romanticization or romantic attitude towards art and design in Europe. And we're wondering if you think art and design is cooler in North America or in Europe.
I went to the Netherlands actually on exchange back a few years ago. I forget what year it was actually. I think it was 2011. I'm not sure. But when I was there, I went to a art school in Rotterdam. And to me, the whole city felt much more aligned with design in general. Not necessarily graphic design, but design. You know, you could tell from the architecture and even down to the details, like the bikes, you know, the bike lanes and stuff like that, how integrated that was with the city.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it's cooler in Europe. I think it's better understood in Europe and accepted. You know, in North America, I think we've, you know, I'm no sociologist or expert on it or historian, whatever, but we've typically been a mm-hmm. economy based on growth, you know, on this idea of, you know, progress, upward progress, kind of capitalist, you know, whatever that is. And I think in Europe, mm-hmm. it's not so much of a degrowth mm-hmm. movement or anything like that, but there is more of an investment into other forms of riches and treasures culturally versus mm-hmm. just, you know, building roads and skyscrapers and stuff like that. And so I think that kind of culture inherently would just, you know, support the arts a lot more. It just would have more value there. And I think that's kind of what I saw when I was in the Netherlands. And so if I had to say, is it cooler in Europe or North America? I think it's cool in both places. I think Europe just does a much better job of supporting it and making sure that it's you know, part of the fabric of society.
When I was in the Netherlands, I had the same sense of design appreciation and design, like, reflected in every level of society.
Yeah.
And after my trip, I came to the realization, I think it's because they've just been protecting themselves from the ocean.
You're totally right about that. Yeah.
For like their entire civilization.
Yeah. Seriously.
It's like it just forces them to think about design.
So. Yeah. And they live in like a really amazing landscape too, where it's completely flat. It's kind of like a Saskatchewan that's in Europe, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah.
Totally. But mm-hmm. because of that, they've been afforded some unique opportunities. You know, like, I don't know if bikes would make any more sense anywhere in the world than it does in the Netherlands. And something as simple as having bike lanes, I think that really changes your entire population in some ways. Not only is there exercise, but there's this eagerness. You're always outside. You're kind of exposed to the elements. You just know the geography so much better when you're on a bike. And I think from that, you mm-hmm. maybe develop an appreciation. You know, when you're in your car and you're zipping around, you're going fast, you don't really pay attention to your environment. But when you're on a bike, you feel every incline, every dip in the road. You know, you really go at a different pace. And I think that sets you up for a much more enriching experience and appreciation for your environment.
Do you like exhibiting your work at the gallery?
I love it. It's my favorite thing ever. Yeah, I love being a part of the whole process of, you know, being at those initial meetings and coming up with an idea, doing it, and then even like installing stuff. It's really fun. Mm-hmm. You know, being in that back room and putting in long nights into getting everything hung up. It's cool.
Cool. Do you prefer like solo show or like collaboration, like featured artist kind of gallery?
I kind of like the collaborations, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly because it's less stress. You know, I don't have to put the whole show on my shoulders or anything. And secondly, I've just never had a solo show, so I don't know if it's better.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's on my bucket list, but I haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
It's cool.
But yeah, it's cool working with a whole bunch of people. I think maybe the audience appreciates that better too, where they can kind of come in and see a whole bunch of different things. And, you know, around every corner, mm-hmm. there's a new work of art by someone with a different style. I think that's always exciting. Mm-hmm. And plus, for sure. it normally makes for a bigger party, right? Because all the artists bring their friends and then those friends bring friends versus me trying to invite like the 20 people that I know. And it just being like a room full of my friends. And it's just, yeah, kind of a little bit sad.
Do you have any shows coming up?
Actually, yes, I have it's a group show again. Nothing major. I only have one piece in it, but it's actually opens tomorrow on Friday. What's tomorrow's date? The May 9th? Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Friday, May 9th. And it's at the Aiden Gallery in Tinseltown across from the Taco Time. Yeah. It's actually really fun. It's the Aiden Gallery is a really cool gallery in that they don't, from my experience, they don't take art really, really seriously. They kind of let it, you know, be what it is. I mean, you can get a beer there and get, you know, a foot away from a painting, which is something that you don't normally get the opportunity to do.
So I guess the last question for Karsten, like, what's your credit card info?
My credit card... Man, that's a good question. I actually have no idea. I'm not going to disclose that. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Sean.
That's completely understandable. How can people reach you if they want to get in touch?
I've got an email address, as does everybody in this era. Yeah. It's karstensmith @gmail.com. I should probably spell out my name because it's a little bit awkward. It's KARSTON Smith @gmail. And I also have a website called karsten.ca. Again, spelled the same way as the Karsten and karstensmith @gmail.
Man, I love the I love your domain. So cool.
I'm so happy I got that. Except karsten.com was taken, so I had to go CA.
I think that's a show.
That was fun, guys.
Yeah, it was really fun. Thanks for coming on, Karsten.
Yep, thanks for joining us.
And as we say on every episode, you can reach us at feedback@makingconversation.ca. So if you have any thoughts or anything you'd like to, you know, get back to us about based on what you've heard in this episode, please email us. And if you've had any ideas percolate in your mind while you've been listening to this discussion, you can email us at bad@makingconversation.ca. And yeah, thank you for listening, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
See you guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Carson.